is the legendary Humble and Fred Show, Canada's national morning show.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
The following episode of Humble and Fred Radio is brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Screen Print, the official band of Humble and Fred, Play for the Cat, iTex, LFS Credit and Finance Solutions, Hill Street Beverage Company, and our newest sponsor, Green Genie SEO. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, call 1-833-437-8465. That's 1-833-HF-STINK. Yeah. And now from the Humble and Fred Queensway National Broadcast Center, here are Humble and Fred.
Hey, welcome, welcome, everybody.
I don't want to get Roger Ashby sick. What would that, how would that look on us? Huh?
I know, the man just settles into retirement, and he comes in here and gets some kind of a plague.
Some kind of big city...
pleurisy.
Salmonella. We're quite excited. Fred's like, where's Roger going to park? Because the snowplow did a bad job in the back. It's so embarrassing.
The guy, he just, like, it's bizarre. Like, there's the visitors and a couple of others. You know, at the end of your driveway when the plow goes by?
Yes.
Well, there's that mound in front of the parking spot.
It's a huge mound.
Like, it's ridiculous. Why wouldn't they just, they know people have to park there.
I don't know. And now Stan can't get to his poo area. And so he went right in front where you're. Well, now I'm even more embarrassed. Roger Ashby's going to be here, and he's going to see my dog's poo, maybe.
Is the studio clean and nice and tidy for Roger? We want him to be impressed, just in case he wants to do a podcast.
Yeah. That's right. Maybe he'll want to do something after he retires, and we're going to charge him big radio money. Roger Ashby is our guest today, and if you people don't know who he is, then you know what? It doesn't matter. It's too late. One of the most iconic radio voices in this country for the last 50 years. A 50-year career just ended last month, and tell the story. You ran into him at one of your, I don't know, weekend retreats, a couple's retreat?
Yeah, I was up in... I was up in the Kawarthas, and we were out in Bob Cajun, and just happened to be walking out of a restaurant as Roger was walking in. His cottage is nearby. But he had already agreed before that to be on the show. That was just, that solidified it. Well, not long after he retired, I said, hey, Rog, would you come on the show? And he said, yeah. He said, just give me a little time, maybe till the new year.
I'm confused. When did he agree to be on our show? Before he retired?
I think the week he retired, I sent him a note. And he said, yeah, it's been a little crazy. Let's give it some time. But yeah, I'll come in.
Can you imagine?
Then I saw him in Bob Cajun, and his wife. And
you guys have, a big retreat out there in the North Country. It's big.
All the radio stars. Roger and I have almost acquired... we now own about 80% of the Kawarthas, Roger and I.
So, it's great. Let me get this straight. Yeah. He owns 79%.
Yeah. The radio and landed gentry.
Well, you know, did you hear Patterson and Ashby have really bought up a lot of the real estate north of 7?
I wish.
Anyway, welcome to the show.
The first question I would have to ask Roger is...
I'm sorry?
Minus 30. What are you doing? You're retired.
Why are you here?
You've worked hard all... Why are you here? Yeah, that will be the first question.
All right.
And you know what he'll say? Because I had to do this show. I was all set to go to Mexico.
It's funny. Mm-hmm. Your first question is going to be, why are you still in Canada at this point in the year? Mm-hmm. And my question is going to be, how much money are they paying you over there at Chum FM? Can a couple guys go and see about applying for your job?
Yeah. They hired a new guy.
Huh? I know.
Apparently out of Chicago or something.
Yep. You know, it's funny. Roger Ashby, Marilyn Dennis, Rick Hodge, these are names that were part of our lives. Mm-hmm. Even before I got here, Roger Ashby was a rock jock, top 40 chum AM guy. Very interesting. He transitioned to FM and then became this legendary morning guy.
Yeah. And I don't know how old he is. Honestly, that question came up before the show between you and I. I'm not sure. But again, when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, first getting interested in radio, like he was around. He was on Chum FM. And I would have been like 14 or 15. But I know, as I've said often, that style of jock, they recognize talent young. You know, look at, what were you, 20 in Vancouver?
Well, I was 17 when I got hired for my very first job, but I got hired for a, you know, basically a chum AM station in Vancouver when I was 20 years old.
Right. So Roger may have been 18 or 19 when he first started at Chum AM, which we'll find out.
And we're going to have a lot of time to talk to Roger, so I hopefully will get an opportunity to explain how I was responsible for the Roger, Rick, and Marilyn show.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Do you know that story, Phil?
I'm not off the top of my mind.
Yeah. After 8 o'clock this morning, Eastern, we'll talk to Roger Ashby. Also, our pal Brett Tanner from Tanner Financial, the Chambers Plan, making a visit. Comes in every once in a while. We're going to find out. You know, if you needed any more reasons to join the Chamber Plan, Brett's going to tell you how it is the lowest risk in terms of, you know, a lot of times these insurance plans, they up your premiums. Mm-hmm. You know, they change every year. That's the cool thing about the Chamber Plan. He'll explain why it's more stable and how stability gives you better rates. Mm-hmm. We think that's it, but because there's a lot of complicated graphs and stuff, but he's going to explain it. When you were a kid, growing up in Scarborough in the 1960s in this city, did cars in Ontario have plugs in them?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Block heaters, we call
them. Block heaters, right. Mm-hmm. And I grew up, until I left home, until I moved to Vancouver, I just assumed all cars everywhere had plugs in them because you needed to plug your car in every night.
Yeah, but it wasn't common here. Some did, some didn't. And you rarely use them.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Do you understand? Everywhere my parents would have gone in Moose Jaw in the 60s and early 70s, in the wintertime, you found a place to plug your car in most of the time.
No, I get it.
And I was telling Fizz this morning that one of the jobs I got to do when I was a kid, I fell in love with driving because my mom and dad regularly would let it, as a treat, you could go and start the car. Mm-hmm. We started the car all the time. Like, that's another thing. You had it plugged in, yes, but you always warmed it up. Like, people just didn't get into the car and drive away like we do now.
Well, I didn't this morning. When I get up, I shower, get dressed, go downstairs, start the car, and then go back in and get my stuff together.
But you're doing it for comfort, I think, aren't you? Because you park your car outside.
I don't want it to be cold when I get in.
Right. But my point to Fizz was, you used to have to do that because you needed to warm the engines up. And now they don't need it to be warmed up as much.
I see what you're saying.
Just because of the way they're... Anyway, I started talking about this with Phil.
Well, batteries have come a long way, too.
For sure.
Oh, yes.
So I started talking about this with Phil. And then I said, you know, nowadays cars are, you know... And I started to try and come up with car references because the engines are made differently. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, nowadays they're...
fuel injected.
Fuel injected. They're cam... aspirated. I ran out of car references at fuel injected.
They have pistons.
Which is key for start, like the old style carburetors. Mm-hmm.
But I got that part
they
right.
They used to have to work a little harder.
They used to have to work way harder. But this is twofold. One is, I don't have, the only car reference I have is fuel injected. And the other thing is, we grew up in a time where you didn't, where you would, anywhere you left, you went and warmed the car up so it would work better. Mm-hmm.
No, I remember my mom had a car with a plug, but I don't think they ever, maybe a couple of times a year you would use it. But it was this climate. This is where I grew up.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that vital, you know? Mm-hmm. But cars not starting because of the cold was a lot more common than it is now.
And also cars even breaking here. Down. Yeah. You guys have no idea. It just used to be a thing. Oh, there's another car on the side of the road.
Right. I just saw my first car for the season on the road.
But like, that was commonplace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cars just regularly broke down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now tow truck drivers, the vultures, they just have to sit and wait for accidents. Yeah. Not for cars broken down.
Fuel injected, Phil. That's where my whole thing ends.
You ever thought of that job off? You know, when I drive home, the strategic areas on, you know, 427, 401, 410, you know, you see the tow trucks.
Oh, yes.
The guy's just sitting there waiting. And I'm, you know, and some of these trucks are big and beautiful. And then it's like, how many calls in a day do you have to get to make money at that?
Mm-hmm.
So to what you said, you know, the breakdowns are sort of non-existent now.
Right.
And these guys are all over. Well, you've been in, you know, a little fender bender. Next thing you know, you turn around and there's three tow trucks behind you. And then the negotiation starts. Them all telling you why you should go with them. And But I don't know where the money is in that. Hey, if there's a tow truck driver listening, give us a call. 1-833-HF-STINK.
Our topic today is how do tow truck drivers make money?
Is your car fuel injected? What like, comes after that?
Like, I know, I know it's not cheap, but...
I'll tell you how they make their money.
You know, I guess they made some money the last couple of days, but...
No, I'll tell you how they make their money.
How?
Well, because they don't just get paid to tow your car. Mm. They get paid by the place they're towing it to.
Oh, no. Yeah, right. If it's a... yeah.
Because the last accident I had a great tow truck driver. Guy turned up. Couldn't have been nicer. And he said, listen, if it's all the same to you, can we take it to this place? I said, sure.
Yeah, you shouldn't have. Never
well, it turned out to... Well, I had a great experience.
No, I know, but here's the key. You should always phone your insurance company because they have preferred shops.
Right.
Oh, no, for sure.
And it's far as warranties, guarantees, if you're not happy with the job.
But what I did is I called my insurance place.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and I said, I'm going to take it to this place. It was because this is when I still had the BMW. Sorry, this was two accidents ago.
This is when you were making Roger Ashby money.
BMW money.
Yeah.
Fuel injected money.
Okay. We never made Roger Ashby money. Anyway. But that's how they make their money. Because this guy made a few hundred bucks for dropping my car off at this place.
See, I made, quickly, a story. You know the Dave accident when he saved my life?
No.
I got sucked into that. A guy, the tow truck driver, came up, talked me into that, and I was a bit rattled. I said, yeah, okay. And then when I got to the body shop, it was a bit shady, but the guy, he talked me into leaving it there. It took way longer than it should have. And then I got the car. I thought it was okay. Mm-hmm. And then about 3 or 4 months after that, it started to crack along the side panel. Well, they had just filled it with mud, right? So I phoned my insurance and I said, I'm not happy with it. And they said, listen, that wasn't a preferred. And I think they had said to me, you know, that's not a preferred thing. I thought, oh, what's the big deal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they said, we can't help you. He said, if that had been a preferred shop, we'd have sent you right back there to
repair it.
What does that mean? They filled it with mud.
Well, instead of putting a new panel or pulling it out and just putting there was a big dent and they just slopped all sorts of body fill in.
Oh, I see.
So it was done. And then, if I'm not mistaken, claimed that they hadn't.
Oh, really?
But hey, man, that industry is...
Well, let me ask you a question, though. And this is serious.
Huh?
Was it fuel injected?
Well, it's pretty far. It's pretty hard not to find a car not fuel injected.
What's all I know about cars? If some used to not be fuel injected.
Really, right. when I had my 65 Dodge van, and it would be temperamental.
Sure.
And I used to have coil problems with that. It would get damp and just stall in the middle of driving down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes to get it started, I'd keep the carburetor open with a screwdriver.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I've
done that with
snowmobiles.
All
that kind of stuff, yeah.
Oh, I remember that. I remember they used to just flood, and you used to have to open up the carburetor. Oh, I know a thing or two, Phil. Before we get further into the show, because we have a lot of people coming in, Roger Ashby, Brett Tanner, Phil Hong, Sergeant Sean. Sean, you better get a story ready to go soon there, son, because once Ashby gets in here, the whole thing is... It's too late.
iTech Sparta Canada proud to announce their newest location. It's opened up there in your Hamilton, Niagara region to serve local businesses in that area. Business owners can now join the already more than 200 businesses in the area and thousands across the GTA and Canada to barter their goods, services, hotel rooms, gift certificates, and more. To get started, just visit iTech Sparta Canada on Facebook to learn more. iTech Sparta on iTech Sparta Canada on Facebook. That's where to go.
That's where to go, my friends. The LFS team has over 25 years of experience in the lending industry with backgrounds in risk management, audit. Is that the word audit? Sorry, I'm in the dark here. Operations and sales. They're bilingual. You know, because this country is, Phil. running this business since 2008. If you're looking to upgrade your equipment, you know, this could just be a copier in the office or a big-time construction, medical, industrial, restaurant. Whatever it is you need, LSF offers experience and personalized service. These are lovely, lovely people. Creditfinance.ca is how you get a hold of them. Go to creditfinance.ca and find out just how easily you can get a lease or loan without very much down, little or no down payment. You know, in America, there's this famous scene at the beginning of a show called, I think it was The Newsroom, with Jeff Daniel.
Yeah. Classic.
Famous scene where he's at a university, and I don't know if you've seen it. It's pretty powerful. It was written by Aaron Sorkin. The guy wrote The West Wing and all the, you know, great writer. I was going to say All the President's Men, but I'm not sure if he wrote that. Doesn't matter. So the scene is Jeff Daniels saying that America is not the greatest country in the world. He says America leads in three categories, and the most people that still believe in angels is one of the ones that always sticks out to me. 70% of Americans believe that angels are real. Well, whatever it is, a large part of the country still believes in a Christian God. That's how you describe it. In a Christian God, an overseeing sky Muppet, somebody up in the sky looking out over everyday life. And if you don't think that's true, listen to this story.
Yeah, yesterday, Sarah Sanders being interviewed, I think, by the Christian Broadcasting Network or whatever. She said that Donald Trump was elected president as an act of God. God wanted him to be president of the United States. And she says, you've got it there. She
says, describe it first because it's unbelievable.
Well, she says it in such a way that it's like matter of fact. Yeah. They asked her and she said yes. Well, I don't know what else to say than play it. I found it, the feeling I get, because, you know, we've established how we feel about religion and all this stuff on the show. You hear that come out of someone's mouth. I actually found it a bit unsettling while I'm driving along.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, wow. This person who's in that position, in a position of power to some degree,
very
actually
powerful,
believes that.
Democracy was heaven sent.
Well, you told me to play it because I hadn't heard it. And my reaction, I'm sure, was very similar to yours. Like, this is a human being in 2019 saying these things out loud.
And what really bothers me about it is, I'm sorry, but she's not a very nice person. For her to stand up there every day and lie for the president, to me, to some degree, that's worse than the president.
Yeah, and against her political values religiously.
Right, and, you know, her dad, the minister, the reverend, and she's supposed to be a person of God and a church-going angel herself.
Yep.
To back a man who lies and has done all the things, it's just such a contradiction. But there she is, standing there, telling the world that God, it was God's decision.
Yeah, it's disturbing. I find it disturbing as well. I find it off-putting, unsettling.
I think God calls all of us to fill different roles at different times. And I think that he wanted Donald Trump to become president, and that's why he's there. And I think he has done a tremendous job in supporting a lot of the things that people of faith really care about.
Yeah,
so people of faith don't care about. Isn't adultery a big thing in your Ten Commandments or something?
Oh, I would say it's up there. Yeah.
Yes.
Isn't grabbing women by the you know, isn't that a thing that, although, you know, it's church.
But it's like anything else. Then, you know, and then religion marries politics, because that got a lot of attention yesterday. And then, of course, they're interviewing a lot of Republicans and some from the South where they really believe in this nonsense. And they're all finding excuses for Trump. Oh, he made mistakes. Hey, we all make mistakes. I mean, you made a mistake. Donald Trump made some mistakes. But he's apologized for it. He's atoned for those mistakes. He's proving now that he is worth, you know, that position. God would forgive.
Yeah.
Like, wow. You know,
like, in and of itself, and maybe if you're new to us, you haven't heard us talk about religion very much. You know, I mentioned the Sky Muppet, which is what I call that idea of the overseeing, overarching entity that looks down upon us all. Mm-hmm. There's nothing really wrong with that if that's your sort of quiet devotion, you know. What I mean by that is, it's like, you know, whatever faith helps you get through the day. You know, a lot of people yesterday were talking about mental health. And for a lot of people, religion is a foundation of their mental health. And that's fine.
Absolutely.
It really is. It's when it becomes unhealthy, mentally unhealthy, for me at least, and I'm assuming you as well, is when people in powerful positions make you think that they're governing their lives based on this fantasy.
And Trump is such a hypocrite.
Yeah.
Because he was somewhat secular. Like,
completely.
Like, actually, I don't want to say promoted it, but established, with, you know, his position on it.
Right.
Well, yesterday, see what he wants now?
Bring back the Bible.
Bible studies in back in the classroom.
Oh, boy.
Like, really?
But it's so ridiculous because, well, okay, so just the one Bible then. Just the Christian God Bible.
Well, of course.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, that's why it's so ridiculous, because, okay, at least admit in 2019 that there are other religions. But you remember, those people that were interviewing Sarah Sanders, Sarah Sanders herself, and the idea of biblical studies is one Christian God.
Right. It's okay
not
to...
Not Buddha, yes. Not Muhammad, not our, you know, the Jewish God. Jerry Seinfeld, not that.
But, you know, it's okay to teach the Bible as long as it's in a context, right? Well, a world religions class.
No, but it can't be in public schools.
Well, as long as it's taught along with other religions so people can understand the context.
Well, that's not what Donald Trump's talking about.
No. This is the thou shalt not stuff.
But I agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think the only place religion belongs is in a history class as an example of, hey, through history, look at wacky people thought.
That's true.
But I don't think... I don't even think all, you know, if you teach one religion, they all should be. I think religion should be kept right out of the schools.
Yes.
Honestly, if my kid went to a school and they came back and they said, you know, I was an American, they said the president wants this and we're bringing it back into the classroom, I'd have a problem.
It's ridiculous.
Well, the thing is, I wouldn't have a problem if it was the study of religion as a subject, because I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
The study of our religion, I would have a problem with, not just because I'm a man of Hebraics. But you know what I mean? Like, I think religion as a study...
Well, that's what I said. It belongs in a history class.
Yeah,
But I don't mind that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think every kid should know. There should be a good understanding of religion so you can understand what all the hatred's about.
And it's voluntary.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I mean, whenever the Middle East comes up, I don't really know what's going on there. Do you? I don't think most people do. You know, it's like I have a vague understanding of it, but I wish I knew it better. I wish I understood why.
It's that bottom line thing. It's,
but I wish that was taught to us.
Right.
I think a lot of kids would benefit from knowing that Muslims aren't scary. Jews don't control the, well, we do. Muslims aren't scary. You know, there's a place for all of it.
Yeah, but that's a tough one. Because how do you teach that without being negative towards one side or the other along the way? Well, and that's where you'd run into problems.
But you could lay it out as at least give the kids a foundation of the major religions of the world, but not just Christian.
It would be, you'd really have to be careful, because somebody would find a problem with it.
Oh, for sure.
True.
But I'll tell you, I'm like you. I would have a problem if they were just teaching Christian values as a class. They can't do that.
No,
they can't do it. Like, even... You know, there was a bit of a, you know, the controversy we came through with, it was mild, with the anthem, you know. What's the new line?
Oh, in all of us command.
In all of us command. But God is still in there. Yeah. In Canada, 2019, the diversity in all the religions. God keep our land. Really? And kids are singing that every day. Because you're going to remember, an overriding religion right now is no religion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but there's also a move, a shift, or whatever. There seems to be...
A trend
with the younger people to at least acknowledging that some higher power is out there. But call it what you will, but the time for saying, God keep our land is...
And they only brought that back in 1980. When I was a kid in public school, we never, that line, it was just O Canada again. You didn't say God keep our land.
Well, things were a lot different. Jesus was my study buddy. That's what I had to, when I went to school.
Studies?
That's right, and you always borrowed his sandals.
That's right. Jesus, Howard, you're with Jesus. He's your study buddy.
And here's his body,
All right, we got to take a break. We're late. Roger Ashby at 8. Brett Tanner coming up, talking about some ways for you to save money this year. It's Humble and Fred Radio on Canada's Comedy Superstation. Funny 820.
According to the most recently updated independently conducted research conducted solely by Humble and Fred, this is the legendary Humble and Fred Show, as performed by the independently conducted research firm of Humble and Fred.
Humble and Fred Radio!
Canada's national morning show.
I wonder if Roger charges for selfies. First of all, I don't do selfies. But if Roger asks us, like, what if he's one of those cool old guys, like, hey guys, let's do it. And what if he comes in here, he's got a selfie stick? Then you got to say yes.
Well, you might remember that in front of the restaurant at Bob Cave's, there was a selfie.
Right.
Do you call that a selfie when there's two people in it?
Yes, that's a two-person selfie.
Mm-hmm.
That's a double, whatever.
Wealthy.
What is it called?
Raj, a group selfie.
Raj and I were in it. Me and Raj.
I saw it, man. Did Raj, I'll tell you what. He comes in here with a selfie stick. I'm taking a selfie to Roger.
Selfie.
Speaking of pictures, I just saw something on social media. Someone has taken Donald Trump, you know, the hair, which is... What's that all about now?
Atrocious.
Like, but they've got him bald. And it's not a joke what he would look like, and he looks great.
Can I see? By the way, that's, he looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, why wouldn't he do that?
I don't know. He does.
I'll
he looks,
put it
he,
up on our...
He looks good. Trumpy. He looks good, Trumpy.
Yeah, Trumpy Blink.
Play for the Cat. iTunes. Playforthecat.com. Spotify. Google Play. Am I missing any? Here comes Brett Tanner.
Get out of the chair. Brett Tanner's here.
Yeah.
Before Brett sits down, let's talk about Hill Street Beverage. The challenge, I guess today's the last day of the challenge.
That's right. Hashtag dry for arthritis or hashtag PCC for Prostate Canada.
Yeah.
That's how you direct. Do you want to say your vote? Anyway, Hill Street will donate $10 to the charity that gets the most hashtag action. Hill Street, yeah, I've been enjoying them all month. Hill Street Craft Brewed Lager, love it. The Designated Draft, I haven't had as many of those, I'll be honest, but I'm more of a craft guy.
Oh, yeah.
They've gotten me through the month with alcohol, but I still get that beer fix, so to speak. Fantastic. Available at Shoppers Drug Mart, Zehrs, Loblaws, all the great, fine grocery stores. And don't forget the wine products as well. Amanda has been talking about them, using them all month long, and quite good. Hill Street Beverage Company.
Before we introduce Brett again, just don't forget our contest. A couple more days today and tomorrow to get your travel story into Gig Sky. Tell us your most memorable story, and we'll give you the Gig Sky sim and $100 worth of data. Will you be taking? Are you taking the Gig Sky to Ferris?
To Paris? Yes, I am.
With Mama?
With Mama in London.
Mm-hmm. We need your memorable story. Send it in by tomorrow. We'll make the draw, and then on Monday we will announce our winner. Could be ridiculous, hilarious, fun, whatever. GigSky.com or go to HumbleAndFredRadio.com and enter $100 worth of travel data and a free sim. You know, for some time we've been enjoying the counsel, I would say, of this this young fellow, Brett Tanner, Tanner Financial. You know you're dealing with somebody who's got some smarts, because both Fred and I received your information about the insurance pooling, and both of us were looking at it this morning going, well, we'll just wait till Brett gets here. we were trying to figure it out. We were Brett Tanner, everybody. Woo! By the way, Brett's here. Well, honestly, I read it, he read it, we both read it together. How are you, by the way?
Good. How you doing?
I'm sick, but happy new year.
Did you have any trouble parking?
I had the 4x4, so I just pulled it onto the snow.
Pull it anywhere.
Oh, perfect.
Attaboy. So Fred and I are looking at this the idea that we wanted to talk about, this stuff we want to talk about for discussion this morning, and we think we understand it, but we thought we'd be better if you explained it. I mean, we both believe it has something to do with pooling.
Exactly. We with the Chamber's plan, we're able to give small business and medium-sized business the stability in their group benefits plan that they typically wouldn't be able to get in the marketplace. So it allows them to have budget predictability and a lot of things that let them focus on their business. So the reason that it works, though, is that there's a pool of 35,000 businesses already across Canada in the pool. So, you know, if your particular firm has a bad year claims-wise, it's absorbed by the pool, which helps you when you have those tougher years.
So when you, let's just break this down as we go. When you say a firm has a bad year in the insurance world, that means a lot of claims.
Exactly. And you know, the Chamber's unique in the sense that if you have under 10 employees, you can opt to go into what's called a fully pooled scenario where you're just part of the 35,000 firms. Your renewal, for example, this year, we've got an exceptional renewal coming in at 2.5%. And that's all you would see as a change in terms of your premiums.
What do you mean by that, at 2.5%?
It only goes up 2.5%.
It only goes up 2.5%.
Oh.
And the confusing part for a lot of businesses is they, when they hear the term inflation, you know, you think about what Canada, the Canadian government posts as their inflation number. Mm-hmm. But in the health industry, inflation's a higher number, mostly because, you know, there's new drugs coming in all the time.
Right.
They're high cost. They're increasing a lot of things. Paramedical practitioners are maximizing their practices, so there's a lot more going on there. So there's, you know, a lot of pressure on benefit plan rates today. And governments, you know, they put in OHIP Plus, they take it out. You know, things change there, and that can affect rates as well. Dental Association, dentists get a bump every year based on what's going on. So all those things push for inflation.
So to be clear, like car insurance, you have an accident, you know, your rates could go up quite a bit. This is sort of protects you against that if you, again, have a bad year.
That's exactly it. So you've got a firm, you know, you hire a new employee and their spouse happens to be diabetic. You don't know.
Right.
All of a sudden, you know, your small group plan blows up because, you know, the regular carrier looks at your claims, your premiums.
Mm-hmm.
With the Chamber, you're in the pool. So essentially things truck along and the pool absorbs what's going on. And because of the size of the pool, it's Canada's largest pool of its kind, it's able to provide that kind of certainty for businesses.
Because there's other companies that would have good years, so to speak.
Sure.
So it would balance it all out.
Well, and this is a stupid question, but if this is available, if somebody found out about, in this particular case, the Chamber's plan, knowing that it's fully pooled and that you can ride out the good and bad years in terms of making claims, well, why would you bother with anything else?
Well, you know, the reality is in the marketplace, people are running businesses. They'll look at pricing sometimes, and initial price might be lower with another carrier. And some insurers, all their marketing money goes into providing that lower initial price. And then they And then they rate you based on how much you use the plan.
Now, I remember this conversation we had once where you were telling me that people will sometimes entice you to their insurance company because the rates are lower initially, but as soon as you start to make claims, it rises substantially.
Sure. And one of the things, you know, with the Chamber plan is that because it's also a nonprofit and we don't collect reserves, which is something that carriers keep to sort of pay claims when you leave. Although today I'm not sure why they need that. Everything's electronic, so there's not many claims after you go.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, we're also able to run the plan with a lower overhead. So all things being equal, we're able to offer, you know, with reasonable rates right from the start as well.
Well, there's something that we... go ahead. We cough and clear our throats on this thing all the time now.
Yeah.
How are you feeling, by the way?
Good.
Huh?
Good. Yeah.
You look good.
Thanks.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, so, great.
Well, yeah, it's the first time we've seen you.
Great drive down. Only 3 accidents in the top of 427.
Really? You know why? Because every year Canadians go, oh, this winter? What?
Well, last time I left, it was a bit tight. And this time I left, and it was an hour and a half to get here.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Isn't that something? I think tires get really hard in this cold, and then people don't think the road's as slippery as it is. Because I saw a guy spun out on the 410, too.
Yeah, it's almost like Every year we think winter will pass us by. Mm-hmm. Then it doesn't. And then we go, wait a minute. I forgot completely how to drive. I was asking Fred, did you grow up here in Ontario?
I did.
Because when I grew up in Saskatchewan, which is Western Canada, where a couple days ago in Winnipeg it was minus 55. Like, that's a real thing. Tires were square. Like, they would freeze and it would get flat. And everybody I knew, my mom and dad, everybody I knew had a plug in their car. They had a block heater. You went nowhere that you couldn't plug your car in.
I grew up in King City, and I went to high school at Brébeuf. So I had to drive into the city every morning. And I would leave King City with a foot of snow in my car. I'd get to Brébeuf, there'd be none. I think everybody thought I lived in New York.
I'm starting to get an understanding here. I mean, I think I understood this somehow that, you know, sometimes, you know, if you weren't with the Chambers plan, you might get an initial rate break. The problem is it renews annually, and as soon as you start to make claims, your annual renewal goes up. The Chamber plan, if I'm correct, because of the pooling aspect, it's stable. That's what we always talk about. It's a stable rate. It's only going up basically the amount of inflation. Inflation as an industry term.
Yeah, exactly. And what's also unique is for larger firms, you might think that only works on the 1-9s who have the option of being fully pooled. We use a partially pooled system. So imagine you've got 25 or 30 employees and you've got higher claims 1 year. Well, you're in the same boat. Your rates are going to go up pretty substantially. With the Chamber, they still might go up, but we're going to use a system where we use partial pooling. So with partial pooling, the firm shares in the risk a little bit in terms of their claims, but the pool is there to also act as a shock absorber and essentially cushion the blow if they do have an off year.
Is there anything new with the Chamber plan? Any new products offered? Or
yeah, probably our next session, I'll be prepared to talk about. We've got some new offerings coming on that will provide additional HR support for businesses. Mm. So a lot of businesses, particularly the ones in the under 50 market we work with, don't have an HR manager yet because they just haven't grown to that size.
Like in our company, Stan is our HR manager, mm-hmm. and he's in charge of making sure that nobody walks by this office mm-hmm. without getting barked at.
Mm-hmm. One bark is yes, two barks is no.
That's right. So you're talking about, so you guys can help out in the HR department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's already 9 free hours through Business Assistance Service of HR, accounting, and legal that every firm signs up for the Chamber gets, but we're looking to beef that up. So there'll be some additional things that they're going to put in place, some templates to help a business owner with certain situations, and often, you know, they're looking for that kind of help, and they've got to either pay, you know, X number of dollars an hour to a professional to sort of walk them through those situations. And it doesn't, you know, still if they're going to have a major HR problem, they should be talking to legal counsel or an accountant, but depending on what the situation is. But the reality is a lot of sort of basic things that business owners, you know, don't have in their repertoire, they'll be able to access.
Amazing. Well, sign up. We always tell you, it's couldn't be simpler. Go to chamberplan.ca. Chamberplan.ca, Tanner Financial, Brett Tanner, he sent us both this information yesterday, but along with it, I don't know if you see my note that I sent you, he sent us a, by the way, guys, save the date, June 6th is the Tanner Financial fundraising charity golf tournament, and as I said to you, my note, thanks for giving us hope that one day it won't be cold as F here in this land.
Right.
In this godforsaken land.
Like, I know why you're here, because you're here on the show today, but why are you here, Brett? Why aren't you down south somewhere? You have a place, don't you?
See, I'm really not that smart.
Because if you're not there, can we be there? Are you, did you get a chance to, or are you getting a chance to get out of here?
We won't get down till March, April at this point.
Wow.
So
that's okay.
It's okay.
You know, because
something to look forward to.
It is
something
one of those years.
And you know, winter isn't over, you know, for some time. Although we're apparently getting a break this weekend. Fizz, did you say it was going to be above zero?
Yeah, at some point.
By Saturday, Sunday, Monday, it's going to get above. It's going to feel like summer here because it's been like today, another day of it feels like minus 35.
And really, we've had it easy until about a week ago.
No, it's been a joke. Like I was hitting golf balls outside least in the first week of January, easily.
No, and after you get through this stretch, as you say, everything else feels balmy. So, really, it's over, because it's not going to get this bad again.
Friday is Groundhog Day.
That's right.
It's also, yeah, I remember that, because it's my kid's birthday. Yeah, it's funny, this, you're right. We, the perspective of this winter should just be that we had a little bit of cold weather, a lot of snow the last couple of days, but for the most part, it's been a joke. Thanks for coming in. Are you going to be able to hang around, or you want to...
Yeah, I'll hang around for a bit. Sounds good.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because we got Roger Ashby coming in. We had to kind of... Awesome. We had kind of reversed when Brett was going to come on the show. I know you have, like, grown-up business to do. Can you hang around for eggs and stuff after? We'll go for eggs.
For sure.
All right. We have budget. We have egg budget for you. Not for you, Fizz. Awesome. Just for Brett. Usually when we take a client out for food, we don't eat. We just watch you eat. But today, I don't know, maybe I'll have something.
Yeah, I think we can swing that.
All right.
You can eat today.
Brett Tanner, everybody. Brett Tanner. Financial. Finally making some sense of insurance. Yeah, I'm just going to just... Sean's going to take you over there.
Yeah.
You can relax, do some work. We're going to take a break here in about 10 minutes, and we can decide what we want to do.
You know, Sunday is Super Bowl. Are you going to a Super Bowl party, Howard?
If by Super Bowl party you mean watching it with myself upstairs,
you
yes.
will watch it?
Yeah, of course.
Will Rachel watch it no. with you?
Rachel's got a... No, I don't think I'm seeing Rachel Sunday. Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to watch the golf on Sunday from Phoenix. Saturday, mm-hmm. by the way, Johnny Miller's last... I think NBC is broadcasting this tournament. They don't normally get this tournament. But anyways, NBC's got it. It's the Phoenix tournament. Tiger's not playing. And it's Miller's last weekend as an announcer. So I'm going to watch him finish. Going to watch golf on Sunday and then Super Bowl on Sunday night.
You know, I'm a little bewildered. You know, the halftime show this year, Maroon 5. Like, it's just sort of floating somewhere in the middle. You know, you have the Rolling Stones because right. you have that male,
powerful,
you know, demographic that would be watching the football game. And then you have, like, Janet Jackson or Lady Gaga, who's ever been, to get the young female audience to watch at halftime to bump up the numbers. You know how that all works. Where's Maroon 5? Are right. they like what is like what
well,
are
he's,
they?
You know, here's the thing about it. I know what you're saying. Like, and I'm mostly confused as to why Maroon 5 in 2019. Is
That's
there
it.
A more current Drake? Somebody isn't. I'm going to throw. I have no name.
Sure, like Ariana Sean, Grande.
Somebody
the week.
What about Ed Sheeran? Isn't he doing things?
He's still doing things. Yeah,
but you know what?
But Adam Levine is famous enough.
Sure. Oh no, I know.
He's
but,
the famous one.
But is he the type that will get females to run to the TV at
yeah.
halftime?
Yeah. Yeah, he's dreamy.
He is dreamy. You know.
I know he's.
People had crushes on him.
No, he's. I think he's the thing, but I just didn't realize Maroon 5 was still even
a group.
Well, I knew they were a group.
But even if you have a hot woman pop star, guys will watch because it's a hot woman. But
yeah.
I don't know how many guys are going to be. Oh, boy, Maroon 5.
I think it's going to be just like the Justin Timberlake one, you know, like that. I didn't really watch that, but it kind of got a lot of TV time.
Yeah, but Timberlake, I would see, would be yeah, different.
He's got some guy cred.
And I would think more woman cred, even.
Both.
Yeah.
Is it just Maroon 5 doing the halftime?
From what I understand.
They have special guests and things?
Yeah, and I don't know if we talked about this, but Skittles is doing this big like theatrical performance the day of the Super Bowl. It's supposed to be like this new way of advertising for them, uh-huh. where they're doing a... like a one-time 30-minute theatrical dramatic performance.
Skittles.
Oh, that's yeah. an advertisement
half an
in a
hour.
Theater.
Wow. Where are they going to do that?
It's in a theater in the same
yeah,
city.
A lot of theaters are showing the Super Bowl this year, like the VIP, the drinks. And
don't you think it's interesting how advertising around Super Bowl products and celebrations that don't have Super Bowl authorization, they all call it the big game now. Like, I know it's been around for a while, but it's rampant now.
Just shows you the power, right?
Sure, because everyone knows what you're talking about, but mm-hmm. if you don't have one of the, if you're not one of the sponsors officially associated, you can still big game the crap out of it.
Oh, it's like every bar everywhere around right now.
Yeah.
It's the big game. Come watch the big game.
Anyway, back to Maroon 5. You know what? You know why I'm not big on Maroon 5?
Mm.
Howie?
I'm listening. I'm looking for Maroon 5.
Beauty
when
Queen
we off. First went to the mix, remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This love is
that song, its toll honestly. On me. That goodbye. Song, we played it every hour on the mix.
Right.
And it was the one thing where I'm sitting there listening to that song thinking,
what was that?
What have we done? How are Humble and Fred talking around this music? But anyway.
Hey, good morning. Hey. It's the Humble and Fred Show.
Oh,
coming up later, we'll do a contest that you won't be interested in. And then some traffic. Fred will get about 4 seconds to talk. I'll get 7 because I'm backselling the song. In the meantime, here's Maroon 5 Mix 99.9. I was so high. That's how the old man used to do it, Sean.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
But this just, whenever I hear this song, it just brings back bad thoughts.
Sure.
It just
does. Painful memories.
Yeah.
It's a 15-year-old song now.
Well,
I mean, the paychecks were okay, but yeah. Other than that.
Yeah.
Other than
the
that.
The paychecks were great. Cut to luxurious cottage country super trailer.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's what I used to do. I used to hit the post. That was my job. Mm-hmm. What does your daddy do for a living? He talks over music until they start singing.
But us going from the edge, right, with a certain rep, and then we did a bit of Mojo, for us to be playing this, it didn't sit well with Humble and Freddians.
Right.
It just didn't.
And you were talking about like Gavin DeGraw and certain kinds of softer acts like that.
Ah, didn't.
Oh, Jerry.
Well, I remember when we used to like burn CDs and like, you know, you used to download your MP3s and sometimes it had the radio, someone leading up to the post and it was in the MP3 you downloaded. Like, I remember I had some rock songs that were kind of cool and I'm pretty sure it might have been one of you guys on the post coming up to it.
No, not me.
At CFNY. But then it came to something like that, and it just ruins the song. Like, the pop song or something like that.
When
like,
you're
it
recording
just,
it.
Yeah, it just totally ruins everything. It's like,
but you understand, that was a DJ's job back in the day, you know? Try and fit as many pieces of information you can over 22 seconds of music before the guy started singing.
Well, and then remember, and that was and then when FM radio came, it was cool not to do that. In the early rock days of FM rock radio, you let the song, you left it alone.
No one told me.
Oh, no, but that, it sort of morphed back into that.
No, I know.
No,
I'm just laughing because when I first got on FM radio, all the guys I worked with were all like, oh, yeah, man, we're going to listen to the third track on the fourth album of blah, blah, blah. Not me. I'd be like, hey, everybody. Here's some fun. Here's a bit.
Hey, everybody.
Anyway, what's going on?
We're still waiting to hear from you tow truck drivers at 1-833-HF-STINK.
Yeah.
If you're a tow truck driver, give us a call.
Maroon 5, that's dark red.
So Maroon 5 kind of started off not in the best way with Humble and Fred, but looking back on that song and other songs of theirs, they're very good pop songs.
Sure.
They just ruined our careers, but they were very good pop songs.
Without a doubt. And, you know, there's... Can you say it? There's guy songs, there's girl songs. That's a real girl song.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is. I don't know too many guys that would like that song, do you?
I don't know. I don't know too many guys
it's
that like
it. It's a 16-year-old girl.
I look
female.
To you for this information.
Yeah.
How about this song? Is this a guy song or a girl song?
Beauty Queen of all F-A-T-9.
Sappy.
Yeah, but some sappy songs are.
I know.
It's like the Bon Jovi of this generation.
Yeah.
It's kind of.
No.
Not.
No.
All our moms
Star
love these songs.
Halfway there.
I don't know what I'm saying.
What this is, this is. I mean, this stuff is actually brilliant.
Because, sure. No, it's very well done.
Because it's produced to sell. It's produced for wide airplane.
It's very hook-laden, as we say in the radio business.
Yeah.
Do you know what a hook is, Sean?
Of course.
Okay. But the thing about Maroon, the thing about Maroon 5 songs, whether they're girl or guy songs... Yeah. Uh-oh, Roger Ashby's coming in.
Okay,
just look. Hey, don't let Stan bark at Roger! The thing about these songs is that after hearing them once... Stop barking at Roger Ashby! How dare you! Okay, we're going to take a break here in a second. The thing about hooks is that you can sing the song after only hearing it once. Sometimes, by the time the song's over, you like, for instance, Like, if you've never heard this song, by the time you get to the end of it, you're like, oh, She Will Be Loved. Oh, okay, that's fine. Good.
That's right.
And that's what you say. I agree. It's brilliant.
Sean thought a hook was what his one-armed uncle has.
Right.
Uh-huh. In Georgetown.
Yeah, in Georgetown. Okay, listen. Look alive, people. Roger Ashby's here.
Look alive.
All right. If you have questions for Roger, we'll take a break here. Our number is 1-833-HF-STINK. The STINK line is open. You can text us as well. We're live for the first time in a long time in Southern Ontario. And we'll be back in a second on Canada's Comedy Superstation, Funny 820, and around the world at humbleandfredradio.com. Well, here we go, kids. Good to be with you on this frosty day in January. I've been looking forward to this for some time. Over the course of 8 years, we've had the opportunity to sit down and talk to many different people in this forum. Peter Mansbridge. That's all I can remember. Who else?
Ron McLean.
Peter Cetera.
Aaron Davis.
Other legendary broadcasters. Yes. Did I mention Peter Mansbridge?
Did you mention Ann Murray?
Ann Murray.
Peter Kent? No.
Peter Mansbridge was on. Yeah. It's a great pleasure to welcome to these microphones. You know, back in 1989, never thought this would happen. Please welcome to our program, Roger Ashby.
Hey! Thank you.
I think I'm the only person in Toronto radio you haven't worked with.
Yeah, that's true.
Huh?
Yeah, we have a bit of we did. We never quite got to your side of the street. Although I did work a little bit with Marilyn way back in Calgary.
But, right. Yeah.
How are you, sir? Welcome to our show.
I'm doing well. Yeah. You guys are. You have trouble holding a job? It's like you keep moving around, or
you know. There's a myth. There's some mythology to that. We were unfired for most of our lives. Uh-huh. We never got fired until 2005, 2006. Yeah. I'd spent my entire career, never been fired.
Yeah.
And then people couldn't stop firing us after that.
Well, that's a badge of honor in this industry, isn't it, to be fired?
Were you ever fired prior?
No. I was fired from the very first job I ever had as a kid in high school.
Right.
I worked at the A&W for a day. And I ate three meals in 6 hours, and they fired me.
Right.
We were just sort of getting warmed up here during the break, and I was going to ask you a question, and then you said, no, ask me on the air. How old were you when you had your first official on-air radio job?
Okay, well, I would have been just shy of my 19th birthday, and that was at CKOC in the lovely city of Hamilton.
Which is a brother station to Funny 820.
Of course.
It's turned into a sports station.
So you were 19. Mm-hmm. How old were you when you came to Toronto and Chum AM?
That was 3 days before my 20th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. That was a little less than a month after man landed on the moon and a week before Woodstock.
Wow. That's a long time.
You know, we all started when we were pretty young. I had my first on-air gig in Moose Jaw around the same time I was 17. Went to Vancouver and I was 20, AM station as well. When you're that age, you know, when Freddie started, you were a similar age. You were doing traffic at...
CKFH.
I know for sure. I never thought we'd ever get to this age and still be doing something. When you began, could you have imagined 50 years of being in broadcasting?
I never looked down the road like that. I just knew that I always wanted to do this. I always wanted to be on the radio. And I didn't want to do anything else. Matter of fact, I'm not qualified to do anything else. So I'm glad it worked out.
Did you?
Yeah, we're barely qualified to do this. So just barely.
Did
qualified.
You grow up in Ontario?
Mm-hmm.
Did you?
I was born in Brantford.
Okay.
Lived in Orangeville for a year, and then spent my high school years in Kitchener-Waterloo.
So at 19, getting a job at Chum was a huge deal. Was that the sort of pinnacle to you? Is that like the the Toronto Maple Leafs of the radio world for you?
Absolutely, because I listened to it as a kid growing up and always wanted to work there. By the time I got there, all the guys who I had listened to when I was growing up had left.
Like Jay Nelson?
Well, Jay was still there.
Jay was still there?
But the rest of them had gone because this was the new regime. I was part of the new regime. So I was the young kid who did the all-night show.
Yeah.
Right? So it was out with the old and in with the new.
And you didn't care that it was the all-night show? It was Chum, and that's all that matters?
At that age, no, not at all. I loved it. I did it for 2.5 years. Loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's quite the education. You know, Fred being a sports guy, and I don't know what sports guys would do to sort of get their reps in. I guess in those days, you did so many sportscasts.
Yeah.
But I did the all-night show at an AM station. And in those days, we didn't sweep songs. We played 22 3-minute records an hour and talked after every single one of them.
You're right.
Which is where you kind of get your, you learn your craft.
That's what made it exciting.
Yeah.
And what also made it exciting, back then, there was only like a handful of stations. Yeah. Like now there's 20 some odd in the market. But back then, if you wanted to listen to rock, like it was Chum.
Yeah.
And then CKY dabbled in it for a while.
Right.
And CKFH and then CFTR. But you had a captive audience.
Well, like, we really did.
Yeah.
Yeah, CKFH, I guess, was our biggest competitor in 1969, 1970, but that soon disappeared.
Yeah, they had a lousy dial position and just didn't do it as well.
Yeah.
But, so you knew when you were talking into that microphone, you were talking to the city.
Yeah, and you know, CFRB, of course, was the big station.
Right.
They were the ones to beat. But they weren't direct competitors. But no. I remember in the fall of 1972, we were the number one AM station for, I think, the first time.
Well, if you
beating
could,
CFRB.
For somebody listening who's, you know, doesn't remember when AM ruled the airways, it was like forget social media, it was the media of the day.
Yeah.
If you wanted to hear about a new song, you turned on Chum AM or in whatever city you lived in, and, you know, and whether it was Vancouver, it was LG73 or... But it was what people did. It's how they got their music.
Well, there was no MTV. There was no much music. You know, it was all radio, as you said.
At the same time, Chum, 1050 Chum was innovative back in the 60s because from 9 to 11 every morning was a talk show, the John Gilbert Show.
Yeah.
What?
Think about that.
At big numbers for that show.
I forget what they called the show, but at 9 o'clock to 11 every morning, it was a two-hour talk show with John Gilbert. And yeah, everybody. Same thing. That type of talk show was really the only one in town, so everybody referenced it. It was powerful, man.
Growing up in the western part of the country, I really had no sense of Chum AM, or I didn't understand what CFTR meant. And then, of course, being in this market now 30 years and looking back on, you know, the history of radio here, that was a huge thing for someone your age to work at the biggest station, one of the biggest in the country. Did you ever have designs as an all-night guy that one day you might do mornings, or do you just want to be in the business and see where it led you?
I after a while, I wanted to get off the all-night show. But not because I didn't like it, but just because I thought I can't stay here for the rest of my life. So I did middays for a while. I never really had designs on a morning show, but as it turned out, every time Jay Nelson would be on vacation or take a day off for sickness, I would be the guy who filled in. And the first time I did that, I was 23, and I filled in for him. And I loved it. And, you know, one thing just led to another, and eventually in 1982... I got the morning show on Chum AM 1050 when Tom Rivers was fired for the fifth time.
How old were you when you first got your morning show there? That would have been, you'd have been
32.
So it's 19. So Tom Rivers gets fired, and then you become a morning man. Did you think at that time, well, I'm a morning guy now. Tom Rivers just got fired. I've put myself in a position now to be fired.
Well,
because
yes.
A lot of stations went through.
You're right.
Morning men.
You're right, but
as we know,
I was put in there because I was doing swing and some programming stuff at the time, and I was the logical choice to go in there because I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a full time air shift at that point. I was doing some part time air shift and part time programming. So they put me in there, and they said it was temporary until they found a morning guy. So I did a temporary morning show for 3 years on 1050 Chum. We called it Lotto 6 to 9. And every once in a while, they would bring somebody in to try out, and they'd call me the night before and say, take tomorrow off because Joey Reynolds is coming in tomorrow. Now, Joey Reynolds, in his day, was a fabulous disc jockey in Buffalo and places like that, but he was past his prime, really. So I'd take a day off and listen to Joey Reynolds auditioning for the job.
Wow.
And finally, in 1985, I worked with Mike Holland, if you remember him. Mm-hmm. I thought we had a pretty good show going. Then they made another change, and Duff Roman and Ross Davies, who were programming Chum FM, said, well, hey, if they don't want you over on AM, come on over here. So it just kind of fell into place that I went over to Chum FM.
And what a move that was. So were you a morning man immediately when you went to Chum FM?
Yeah. I was the guy.
Now, when did they bring in Marilyn?
About a year later.
That was 86?
Yeah, because I worked with Rick Hodge for a year, and during that year, we tried to find a female. And, you know, you go back to 1986, there weren't as many females in the business as there are today, and most of the women who auditioned were actresses, and they were great actresses, but they couldn't be natural on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And we must have auditioned, I'd say, close to 100 different women. And,
wow,
and,
are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. They would come in, you know, for their five-minute interview, and then...
Any names we know?
No names that I remember.
Oh, okay.
And after that year, we decided we'd just set it aside for a while, and then Marilyn came to town looking for work, because her husband had been transferred here. He was in media, too. And... she came in, and my boss said, well, we might as well do one more audition. So I sat down with her, and I knew instantly, and she knew instantly, that we were a team. Like the chemistry was immediate.
Yeah.
She was, I always say, the sister I never had, and I was the brother she never had. And
she's a pretty special girl. I knew her in Calgary a little bit, and we worked at different stations, but I knew a bunch of people that... Yeah, and she was special then. She was just one of those people, very, very funny and very smart.
Yeah.
And just one of those people that you sort of see, they sort of have something. And it was never a surprise. By the time we got together in 1989, you guys had been Roger, Rick, and Marilyn, I guess, for about 3 years. And it sounded like you'd been doing this show forever.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people wouldn't remember this, but Chum FM was Toronto's first FM rock station. Like,
yes,
it was an album rock, real cool radio station. Now, when you took over in 85, had it gone to the more accessible
They had
format?
Just made the change. They made the change in 84 because they were battling it out with Q107 for top rock station. And,
right.
And it was decided that we should change our format and become more of a top 40 adult contemporary kind of station.
And which was key for you guys, because that really sort of opened up an audience.
Yeah.
It wasn't as skewed, so to speak.
Well, the top 40 audience was gradually shifting away from AM, so it was a perfect time for us to
It was also a time in Canada where the regulations around FM radio started to relax. I first started in FM in 1981 or 2. I was working at CFOX.
Right.
I did the morning show at CFOX in Vancouver, and we had so many... foreground commitments in terms of spoken word.
Yeah.
And the reason when we've talked about this on the show a little bit, but you know, AM sort of fought the oncoming, you know, shift to FM by making FM radio stations talk a lot.
Yeah.
And then sort of in the middle of the 80s, it started to relax a little bit. Even when we started together at NY, there was still a lot of foreground programming later in the day.
Well, at Chum FM, it was in Toronto, right? Was their foreground show?
That's right. That was an hour news documentary kind of show. But also, when you said foreground, it reminded me of the pieces we'd have to do about artists.
Yeah.
And at that time, I was on 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., and every morning at 9:40, we'd have to do this 60 to 90 second blurb about the artist.
And you get the book out, and it would show what you had to. I know, I had the same regulations.
Do you remember the song Walking in Memphis by Mark Cohn?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was the artist that day. And at 9:30, my producer, Tom, said, are you all ready? You got to do the Mark Cohn thing at 20 to 10. I said, oh, forgot all about it. So I didn't even have time to look him up. So I just made stuff up. I said, he was born here, he went to school here, his first album came out in this year, and I did 60 seconds on him. And then about 3 months later, he came into the station to promote this song, and I told him, and he thought it was very funny. He said, well, tell me all about myself.
That's right. His name is Mark. He went for a walk once in Memphis.
And it's in Tennessee.
And that's a nice place if you've never been.
On that note, even when you're at Chumayam, 1050, a lot of stars came through that building.
Oh, they sure did.
Of course, you would have missed the Beatles.
I missed the Beatles. Yeah.
Right. Have you ever interviewed a Beatle?
I've met Paul McCartney backstage at one of his concerts. I interviewed George Harrison and Ringo Starr by phone, but I never had any contact with John Lennon.
What about the Stones?
Met the Rolling Stones twice, once at the El Macambo.
Yeah.
When they were there in 77, and again in Barbados in 86.
Yeah, well, I wanted to get to that story in a little bit about some of the people you've met through the years and such. And just, what you know, I think we've established that there was a time where Chum AM and then Chum FM, but Chum AM was a real iconic radio station in this market. There's nobody listening that, you know, of a certain age that wouldn't have a sense of the... I remember looking at the charts, and
the
that was a
chart,
real
yeah.
thing for people.
Yeah, I collected them all. I mean, from the time I was 10 years old, I started collecting Chum charts, and I still have them. And when I finally got my picture on, oh my God.
It must be mind-blowing.
What's that like to collect Chum charts and then all of a sudden one's issued with your face on it?
I couldn't believe it had happened. Never in a million years did I ever think I'd get my picture on a Chum chart.
Were your parents... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Were your parents happy with your choice of
yeah,
a career?
My parents were great because I had applied to go to university after high school. And that summer, between high school and university, I was offered the job at CKOC in Hamilton. So my parents said, we know you've wanted to do this since you were 10 years old, so go ahead, take the job. You can always go back to school, you know, that kind of thing. And, of course, I never went back to school. But, yeah, they were very supportive. And my dad had built me a little radio station down in the basement when I was 10, 11 years old that I would sit there. All the other kids would be at the high school football game or the dance, and I'd be in my basement playing radio. And that's so by the time I got my first part-time job, I had 7 years' experience.
That's right.
Isn't that... I mean, it's amazing how we all have those stories. I
Absolutely.
Mean, it was the same thing. I
yeah.
used to broadcast from the rec
sure.
room up into the dining room.
Yeah,
and
me
my
too.
My parents would sit there and listen to it
yeah.
and, of course, just sort of put up with it because it wasn't very good at the time,
yeah.
but... You had the same
thing. Well, I worked, and we had a little high school mm-hmm. radio station, me and the other radio nerd in grade mm-hmm. 11, and the only we did our little show basically to the, we broadcast it to the student lounge, but we're the only ones listening
yeah.
to it. No, it's true. By the time I actually got into radio, I feel like I'd been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
And it's funny because sometimes we get kids in here, radio schools and such, and you can kind of tell the ones that have passion for it.
Yeah.
And you know, really, that's what we all three of us had. We just loved doing it to the exclusion of everything mm-hmm. else.
You know, back in those days, there were no radio colleges apart from Ryerson. There was no Humber, no Seneca, no Fanshawe, no Conestoga, none of those places. And nowadays, so many kids get turned out of there each year in April looking for work. I don't know how they all find employment, but you know sometimes when I speak at these classes or when I have in the past, I haven't done it recently. You can look over the 20 kids sitting there and you can pick out the four that are going to make it.
Oh yeah,
Roger, I did some teaching and I had it was a one like one third of them were into it, another third were sort of into it. And the other third was mom and dad told them they had to go to college, so this looked like yeah. the easiest thing.
Or they think this is a glamorous way to go through life.
Oh, yeah.
Being on the radio.
Just look at the three
know.
Of us.
Yeah.
So glamorous.
But back in our day, like the best college was working at a radio station, doing all nights or evenings.
Sure
or
was.
Actual
hand.
Yeah. But that doesn't exist now.
No. There
it's
are
all
no overnight shows
no.
anymore.
No. We some years ago, Fred and I were speaking at a radio conference here in Toronto, and I said that. I said, you know, you guys have automated yourself out of talent development. I was talking to these, you know, radio companies, and I said, you know, when we all started, we got our 10,000 hours in because mm-hmm. we were on the all-night shows. I said, now you don't have all-night shows. You don't have weekend programming. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, when kids come in here as intern candidates, we used to be able to tell right away if they had a chance because they would say, this is when we were working on Yonge Street. They'd say, well, where do I park? I go, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's not my problem.
Mm-hmm.
Just we're here tomorrow morning. Show up or not.
Yeah.
But you can tell the ones that have passion.
You know, nowadays people can do stuff online, you know, podcasts and, mm-hmm. and various things they can do to make themselves known and to practice.
Yeah.
Like we used to practice. They can do that and they can get some attention.
So you start doing the show with Marilyn. How quick did the results? Because it was almost instantly you guys jump to the top of the ratings, wasn't it?
I don't really remember. I think there was a press release issued about a year later saying how well the morning show was doing. But you know what? I never concerned myself with ratings because I would second-guess myself if I did.
Yeah.
If I asked on a regular basis how the ratings were, I really didn't want to know. You know, this is what I did. This is what Marilyn did, Haji did. The three of us did it together. We did it as well as we could. We got accolades from audience members. We were told by the boss we were doing a good job. That's good enough for me. I don't want to see numbers.
Even though numbers are money.
Yeah, but they're money to the sales department and to management. They're the ones who look after the numbers. They're the ones to be concerned about the numbers. We're the on-air people.
Yeah,
let
but those,
them worry about it.
But those numbers gave you a good paycheck.
Well, of course they did. Yeah.
See, that's
but it wasn't my. I didn't concern myself with it.
I was going to say, that's the difference between Ashby and you and I, because we were always like, are we going to get any numbers? Ashby's like, I don't concern myself with numbers. I mean, when you're number one, how much more number one can you be?
Well, we weren't always number
one.
No,
I know.
We'd go back and forth, but
for a long time.
But you had a lot of celebratory parties over ratings, I'm sure.
Oh, sure we did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, listen, I've had a great career. But, you know, they said to me once, we want to put you on the bonus system. You know, you get more audience and we'll give you more money.
Right.
And I said, no, I don't want any part of that. And I said, this is what I do. I can't give you 110%. I'm giving you 100 and that's as good as it gets.
Nice.
And I don't want to be on a bonus system. I just want a salary. I want to know what I'm going to make.
Well, we did that too for a while. Remember, they just paid us more money instead of bonus, which I thought was better.
What am I supposed to do to get more audience? This is what I do. If this isn't good enough, tell me.
No, that's a great perspective on it. It is. And then you worked Hodge into the
Yeah, well, remember, he was there before me. He was on FM before I was.
Well, you know, in 1980, J. Robert Wood offered me the job to be the sportscaster behind Henderson and Hodge, and I would have filled in when they were on holidays.
Great.
And then at the time, and I agreed to take the job and then had second thoughts because I was on the air every day at CFNY. But part of me is thinking, boy, if Hodge or Henderson ever leave, I got a great job. Lucky I didn't go because they stayed for years and years and years.
You'd still be like the third sports guy on Chum Radio.
Yeah, Brian Henderson just passed away a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That voice you're hearing with us this morning is Roger Ashby. He's just recently retired. And I think it'll be an interesting conversation when we come back after the break to talk about just, you know, like, at some point, when did you know? When do any of us know when it's time to stop doing it? And then of course, what do you do after? We'll get to all that. So Fred asked you when you guys sort of knew you had something, and it was pretty immediate. By the time Fred and I started, it was 1989, where this is our 30th year of the Humble and Fred Show. Hard to believe.
Great.
We haven't. If you people have this. It's weird how we got this reputation as guys that worked a lot of different places, but we really didn't. We worked at The Edge. We worked at Mojo. We worked together at The Mix, and that was it, basically.
Yeah.
And then we started this thing, and then people got kind of the taste for firing us again. But you were sort of in a very stable kind of situation, which is unusual for radio people.
Well, I can tell you this, too. When the Waters family owned Chum, it was completely different than it is now. And nothing against Bell Media. They treated me well. But it's a corporate place, right? When the Waters family owned it, the family would walk in the same door as we would every morning. Everybody knew everybody. They were very loyal to their employees and vice versa. And there were two or three times in my career where they could have let me go. And if it was now and the same thing happened, I would have been let go.
Well,
but they always found something else for you. They were loyal to their employees. Okay, well, that didn't quite work out for you over here, but why don't we put you over here and see if this works better for you?
Well, it worked out because they did that because you were a talented employee. It wasn't like radio families like the Slates and the Waters. It wasn't a charitable thing, but if you had talent, they found a place for you.
Plus, I have to believe, given the success, you guys were fielding offers quite often. And that loyalty would come back to, no, I'm going to stay here?
We had a couple of offers for the group of us to go, and then we each had some...
To leave the city?
No, it was within the city.
Oh, I see.
And then...
I remember I heard one rumor, yes.
And then we had some individual offers, too. But, you know, I never wanted to go. I remember in 1974, when I was on 1050 Chum, I would have been 25 years old. I was offered noon to 3 on KFRC in San Francisco.
Wow.
Which was a big station at the time. And they offered me $60,000 a year in 1974. which was a hell of a lot more than I was making then, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't go because I think part of me was scared to move from one country to another. I'd always heard that the radio business, as transient as it is in Canada, is even more so in the States, especially back then. So I didn't go. And I'm glad I didn't, because the guy who was going to hire me himself was let go 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
So if he had been let go, as he was, and if I had gone there, who knows if I would have been let go. And then where would my career have gone? I couldn't just get on a plane and come back to Chum.
So. Those 50 years all at Chum, were you always an employee? Like an actual employee of the company?
Yes,
I was. As opposed to a contracted work?
Always an employee, yeah.
Isn't that something?
All right, well, we'll take a quick break here. Tell us what you know about, you know, Mark Cohn. I don't know. We'll take a break. It's Humble and Fred and Roger Ashby. Who would have thunk it? If you have a question, you can always text us, 1-833-437-8465. We're live on Canada's Comedy Superstation, Funny 820, and around the world. Canada's most downloaded podcast, by the way, just so you know.
Oh, good. I'll check it out.
Yeah, check that out. You know where to find podcasts? We'll show you.
No.
HumbleandFredRadio.com.
I sat up there and wondered, hey, am I going nowhere fast? I see the telephone poles, I watch a sparrow fly, and all the lonely songs, Lord, but I just drive on by. And I think of all the dreams there that never came to pass, and I can't help but wonder, hey, are we going nowhere fast?
In the wee small hours of the morning, while the whole wide world is fast asleep, you lie.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Humble and Fred Radio on Siri. I'm sorry. We're not on the satellite anymore. I almost screwed up. Funny 820. And, of course, around the world at HumbleAndFredRadio.com. Ashby just said, how do you guys make money? Watch, my friend, watch. Brought to you by FYI Music News.
Yes.
I see. I know
it's
that.
All live reads, like back in the old days.
Gotcha. Have you got any live reads I can do? Because I heard you blow an account last hour.
Well, that was off the air. Anyway.
that's to get business.
That's right. That's how we get sponsorship. Look at Ashby. Easy. And Tanner's like, easy now. Here's the thing. We thank our friends at FYI Music News.
Hey. Yeah, there's a feature this week about the Junos coming up in March in London. Shawn Mendes and Sarah McLachlan, who will be hosting. Today's new track, Danielle Todd. Crazy is the song, so click on and listen to that. That's part of FYIMusicNews.ca, a new track every day, so you can discover Canadian music. The music biz headlines are there, the music news digest, the media beat, even a job section. FYIMusicNews.ca.
Yesterday, the Sherpa was in here. Tim Niblett's a portfolio manager. Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. We were talking about all kind of things, stock market volatility, reviewing your portfolio. We had this conversation about dollar cost averaging. And we won't do it justice. If you want to go check it out, it was really something. And, you know, that was on... Phil, do we have a show from yesterday? Is it on the internet?
Yes, this is definitely on the internet.
Is the show on the internet? Anyway, check it out. And tim.niblett at raymondjames.ca for a full portfolio review. And that's how we do it.
How much did you make there?
Enough to buy you another coffee.
Okay, good.
It's tea.
Is it tea?
The expensive stuff, too.
Speaking of numbers, you know, when we all started in this business, as you mentioned, it was just out of passion, and we just loved doing it. And I never really thought about, you know, what a person would make And I will be honest, both of us, very grateful for the money we made doing this, because we would have done it anyway. We just love doing it. But my point is, did you ever imagine when you started out that you would one day, you know, make a really great living doing what you love doing?
I did not get in the business for money. I don't think any of us did. If anybody gets into this business to make money, that's exactly the wrong reason to do
sure.
it. You get in because you have a passion for it, and if you become good enough and you work for the right company, then you can make a good living at it. That's as simple as that.
And a lot of it's timing. Right place, right time, right
yes,
opportunity.
Yes, of course it is. I've had a lot of good fortune.
And there's a lot of great broadcasters not working and haven't worked for a long time because a lot of things didn't line up.
Well, and the business
as we said
changed.
Earlier, too. I mean, there's not as many jobs around either.
I'll tell you, too, I never used a lawyer for any negotiations I ever did. My wife was very good at this. She would encourage me and say, why don't you try this, why don't you try that? I didn't want to use a lawyer. I thought, wait a minute, a lawyer? That was very foreign to me. You know, I can sit down with my boss and we can hammer something out.
But a guy, you know, a lot of people would be surprised to hear that because, you know, somebody in your position, you know, at the top of a big radio station, the biggest market in the country. But yet you had some, you know, you had a lot of loyalty there with that family, the Waters, and then, of course, later the company took it over. But when you started thinking about retirement, was there a time where they said, no, Roger, stay and we'll pay you even more money?
Well, it was discussed a couple of years ago, like how much longer do you think you want to do this, you know, and I offered what I thought and they said what they thought, and then we came to an agreement that would be another 2 years, as it turned out. So, I was prepared for it. I knew it was coming, and all is good. And I'm still going to be doing some stuff for Bell Media. My card still gets me in the door at 299 Queen, so I'm not completely retired. I am going to be doing some other stuff.
What stuff do you think you
might
want to
do? I may be doing some stuff on the iHeartRadio app. I may be doing some stuff on terrestrial radio through the Bell Media Network across Canada. It hasn't been completely decided yet.
Well, didn't I hear something about a Roger Ashby channel on iHeartRadio?
Yeah, that was announced on my final day, and it was funny. Randy Lennox, who's the big guy there at Bell Media, he made the announcement on my final day, and I said, whoa. I said, well, there you go. If he says it, it must be true.
Yeah, right. And you're like, what?
So the one thing I think about, I'm going to be 63 in July. When I think about retiring, and we only do this a couple hours a day, 4 days a week, so it's like semi-retirement. It is, let's be honest. I think when it's over, getting up in the morning, because I had a period after we got fired at the Mix a couple of years where I didn't work, and I hated mornings, because when I'd wake up in the morning, I had nowhere to go, and I couldn't exercise this muscle.
Yep.
Where are you with that? Because after 50 years, it stops. What are mornings like for you
right
now?
Well, the first thing people say to me, gee, it must be nice to sleep in. Okay, that's what everybody says. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is. Of course it is. But when I got up at 3:45 for all those years, I didn't mind it because I knew I was getting up to go somewhere I wanted to be.
Yeah. Right.
Now I wake up at 7:00 and I think, I don't really have a schedule. I mean, I'm going to go to the gym or I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do later today, but do I really have to get up now?
Mm-hmm. Isn't it weird that
do you like that or
no?
I
kind of don't like that.
Right.
Because this morning, you know, coming in here this morning, it was great. I went through my normal morning routine that I had gone through for 35 years, and it felt good.
But I was going to say, it's a funny thing about doing mornings as long as we all have. It seems that is the most fascinating thing to people. Like, how do you get up that early? And I said, you know what? Getting up in the middle of the night is the easiest part of the job because I couldn't wait to go to work.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go to work now. I mean, yeah, our situation is different. When we signed with Sirius, we basically said we're never starting at 6 a.m. again.
Right.
So we started at 7. This was actually even before Stern did it.
Mm-hmm.
So we said we'll start at 7. So now, you know, he gets up and I get up around 5:30. So it's like the weekend every day.
Yeah.
Like really, getting up at 3:30 is not the worst thing, but it's definitely different than that.
But let's not forget the people who get up at 4:30, 5 every day. And because I remember when I would drive past the gym at 5 a.m. on my way in, there would be cars going into the gym. And no doubt these were people who were getting a head start on the day, and they would go into the gym for an hour or whatever. They'd have a shower, then they'd go to work. They'd sit in traffic for another hour. They'd get to work, and they'd stay there until 5 o'clock, and they'd get up the next morning and do it all over again. So, you know, we really have it pretty easy.
Oh, we had a great
gig.
Well,
this is people used to say to me all the time, how do you get up at 3:30, 4 o'clock, whatever it was? And I'd say, yeah, but I'm back home by 11 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what you there's people I see on the road at, you know, 5 o'clock, 5:30 in the morning. They're driving home at 6 o'clock at night.
I know.
And we can't relate to that.
And
working.
We were never out there on the hydro lines in minus 30 degree weather.
And you know, we always, both Fred and I, had an appreciation for the how lucky we were not to actually have to get up and go and have fun and, you know, goof around with your buddies and listen to some music and talk to some people. And so speaking of that, you mentioned you'd met the Rolling Stones, and I had read the story about you running into Mick and the Barbados.
Yeah.
Just like hang when you, because for years, Roger, Rick, and Marilyn did Breakfast in Barbados.
This was the first year when we took Winners down to Barbados, 1986. And as it turned out, Mick Jagger was down there at Eddie Grant's studio recording. That was just coincidence. And we got to know some record people who got us into Eddie Grant's place. And he had purchased an old plantation from the 1700s. And the building where they used to keep their slaves, he had turned into a recording studio. And he left the big iron rings in the wall where they used to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was a beautiful recording studio, and Mick Jagger was there recording. So we were allowed in. We got in behind the scenes, and we sat down. We had a conversation with Mick for about half an hour, and he talked cricket for most of it. And then he said, well, I got to go back in the studio. So he goes in, and then I was with Ross Davies. Remember Ross Davies?
Sure,
Ross is working for
Numeris
now, but Ross was the program director for Chum FM at the time. And he had a camera. He said, oh, my God. He said, he's gone back into the studio. We didn't get a picture. Well, we thought, well, we'll phone back in. So we called back into the studio. Can Mick come out for a quick photo? And he came out. And now there's the three of us and nobody to take the picture. And it was long before the days of selfies. Mm-hmm. So he said, I'll find somebody. And he left and he was gone for a good 5 minutes or more and came back. And
Mick Jagger.
Yeah, Mick Jagger.
Running around
Eddie Grant's estate. And found a housekeeper to come over and take the photo of us.
Were the other guys there too, or was
no? It was just him that time.
You know, people often ask us when you know someone would come into our studio over the years. You know, whether it's Dave Grohl or Kevin Smith, were you ever intimidated by a guest? Was there a time in your 50 years where, you know, you saw on the schedule or your producer said, hey, tomorrow morning, so-and-so is going to be on with you guys?
Well, I was always not intimidated, but I was always nervous before a guest came in. Always. No matter who it was. Because it was somebody, if it was a celebrity, it was because he was a celebrity, he or she. Or if it was a doctor or somebody who was coming in, I was a little nervous because they were new new to the radio station. And, you know, thankfully, Marilyn was always very good with guests, so I could defer to her sometimes. But never intimidated, but always nervous, which I think was a good thing.
Well, didn't Chum FM flirt with Howard Stern for a while?
Well, before I went over there in 85, I think it was in the early 80s that he was offered the morning show on Chum FM, or they were going to offer him that. There was conversations. I don't know
well,
how
they had
far
some,
I
see they it. Were doing some auditions.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if you know the story of me coming out from Calgary.
No,
did you know that?
No.
So I got a call from I'm not sure if it was Ross Davies or
Jay Robert.
Yeah,
and they flew me out from Calgary on the weekend. This would have been about 84, 85. I did mornings on Chum FM with Rick Ringer as my op. I did 6 to 9, both Saturday and Sunday.
Hmm.
And I was just, wasn't really interested in the job. I really didn't know what Chum FM was.
Yeah.
I was doing a kids TV show in Calgary. And I came out and did mornings for a couple of days, got to hang out in Toronto, went home. And then they announced this new morning show. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Well, you see, you could have got the job that I got.
Would have been doing sports.
Everybody's lives would have been different.
Yeah.
No, Hodge and Henderson never left, remember?
Oh, that's right. Well, but it's
I would
just
have been
weird.
Doing weekend sport.
But my point is that it was strange. Like, I didn't think of anything at the time. I just thought it was like a nice trip to come to. I'd never been to Toronto before.
Yeah.
And I did. It was weird. I don't even know what I called myself. But I just remember going to J. Robert Wood's office after thanking him very much for bringing me out to Toronto.
Yeah. Great. Well, I'm sorry you didn't get the job. In retrospect, I'm glad you didn't.
You know what? It worked out for you, sir.
It worked out for you, too.
You talked about those Breakfast in Barbados shows, too. those went on for years and years and years.
We went 32 years in a row, I think.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, when you did those trips, were the listeners there that week, or did you do the week and then...
No, they were there that week.
How did you like that?
Well,
to be honest, how did you like traveling with listeners, especially with such a high profile?
Well, you know, we never had any problem with listeners. Let me put that, you know, let me say that first off, with a couple of minor exceptions. But they were all nice people. They were all thrilled to death. I mean, they just won the trip of a lifetime. Why wouldn't they be nice and generous? And so, the only thing is, when you're away with somebody like that, I'm sure you've experienced this too.
That's why we're asking.
You're on. You have to be on 24 hours a day. And when you take 30 people with you, or 35, no, we took 70 people. We took 35 couples. So when you've got 70 people with you on a large resort, I can't remember the faces of those 70 people.
Right.
So I'm smiling at everybody I see. Could be somebody from Germany who doesn't even speak English.
Somebody's on the trip.
And I'm just so good.
And I'm smiling like they're supposed to know who I am. And you know, so that's the one thing I didn't like. You have to be on all the time. You can't really let your guard down.
Or laying by the pool in the afternoon, and people are so thrilled to be there with you, they want to talk and talk and talk.
But, you know, that's okay.
Yeah. Listen, right.
There are people listening right now who are saying, you're complaining about this?
No, I know.
But they're used to it, because that's all we do, Raj. We just complain about stuff. I went on a trip. We did that several times. But, you know, and it's great because they're thrilled to be with you. But on the other hand, they're like, hey, do you know what time, you know, the buffet is? I'm like, I don't work at the resort. Yeah.
Plus, the profile of our audience was a little different. Oh, a little more susceptible to trouble.
In Barbados, it's a very safe, civilized island. You're not stuck in a compound somewhere. And you can easily get away and do all kinds of different things. You can rent a car, travel around the island. There's all kinds of sports to play. You can go into Bridgetown. So you could go the whole week and hardly see most of the winners.
Yeah, for sure.
Because everybody's doing their own thing.
And would they come and watch the show when you guys were...
Yeah, they were asked to come down every morning. Not everybody would come down, and not everybody would come down at 5:30. But by, you know, by 7:30, 8 o'clock, we had a large crowd there.
There had to be a hangover factor there, I would imagine.
Some never slept.
Roger Ashby, one of the things I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, and we sort of touched on it in terms of you doing some things after retirement. That's one of the things I think a lot of people our age... When we were younger, guys our age were very old, and it seemed like, you know, when my dad was 59 years old, I just thought he was, you know, done. Yeah. But one of the things I think a lot of people our age are worried about is being bored. And as you said, you were excited to come in here today because you had something to do, and I think that's really important. That
bored in retirement, you mean? Yeah, well, you know, retirement is a scary thing, really, unless you... See, some people look forward to retirement because they haven't really liked their career.
Right.
And they might have a hobby, like maybe they're good at carpentry or something. Right? And so they make a living doing their hobby after they retire. I know a guy who was with the police department for 30 years, retired at 50. You know, that was 30 years. You put in your 30 years, full pension. And then he started up his own security company and made more money doing that than he ever made as a police officer.
Yeah, nice.
Do you have one? Do you have a hobby?
No. That's just the thing. So that's why I want to continue to do something on the radio somewhere. Because I retirement is a little scary.
Well, you can come in here and do a podcast while you have the studio. No, seriously, we're happy to have you.
You know, most of my friends are outside the industry, and I had guys that work for Hydro's, guy work for the city, and they couldn't wait to retire for all those reasons.
Yeah.
The Hydro guy up poles in this weather.
Yep. I get that.
But they say to me now, like, hey, when are you going to retire, man? Like, when are you going to retire? I say, retire from what?
Mm.
Like, this is nothing really to retire from. Because, again, that passion is there. And, again, I just keep thinking of what you've said. It's like you love it so much, it's hard to sort of figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah. I think it's funny, too. People say, I guess it's a natural, I would probably say it, too, congratulations on your retirement.
Yeah.
And that strikes me as being a little odd, you know.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm retired. I don't get up early anymore. Mm-hmm. It's okay, but... I don't know if it's congratulations. That would be to somebody who didn't like their job and was finally retired.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
That horrible thing you had to do for 50 years.
Yeah.
Roger Ashby's going to hang with us for the last 10 minutes of our terrestrial programming here. and then we're going to take some pictures. It'll be great. Last couple minutes, want to find out what... Where does Roger Ashby go after today? Are you going to hang out with Phil? Or are you going to go for lunch? I don't know.
And maybe we'll get Roger's overview of where the business is at right now as well. All right?
Sure.
Okay, maybe we'll talk about that in our last 10 minutes. But first, let's talk about our friends at Strain Print, Freddie.
Hey, use cannabis better. Use cannabis better with the free Strain Print companion app that will help you learn how much more rewarding and beneficial your experience with cannabis can be. Now, the app can be easily downloaded for free on the Apple Store or the Google Play Store. It's right there. Or go to strainprint.ca. And find out all about how StrainPrint can help you with whatever ails you. Also, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all there. StrainPrint.
Phil, I don't know if you understand about this thing called search engine optimization. I know you do, Fizzy. Go to greengenieseo.com and rank number one on page one of Google for your business. They've helped hundreds of businesses grow their customer base with revolutionary online marketing tactics, all at a fraction of the cost of many other forms of advertising. Get a free business evaluation and find out how to beat your competition where it counts on Google ranking. You, when you say, hey, Google, where, how's my business? It better come up number one. If it doesn't, call Green Genie. Go to greengenieseo.com. I want to mention, you know, Roger, we were talking about all the years we spent introducing songs and speaking over intros and, you know, talking right up to the vocal was a big part of our early careers. And I love that. You know, I love being a rock and roll disc jockey or a DJ. And then we both, all of us, transitioned to doing mornings. Did you ever think... Hi, Phil. This is fun.
Howard controlled Hey Google there. For a
I didn't mean to Google you there. Hey Google! Oh, did I Hey Google Phil's phone?
Yeah, you triggered it. Yeah.
You know, we had this conversation in the, you know, when we were doing pretty well as Humble and Fred on the Edge, and I wonder if you ever had the conversation with Ross Davies or any of your other managers saying, hey, you know, maybe Roger, Rick, and Marilyn should be playing less music and talking more, because there was a time in the mid-90s where radio stations in the States, all the morning shows went to all talk. By the early 2000s, most FM morning shows weren't playing any music anymore at all in the States. Did you guys ever have that conversation?
No, we never did, because we were always a music-driven station. Over the years, we probably ended up playing one or two less songs per hour, because we were chatting more and it was flowing well with the music, but there was never any discussion about eliminating music. No. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad, to be honest with you, because I'm not sure. Like, this is fun doing this for an hour with you guys, but I'm not sure I could have done it every day for 3.5 hours. Just talk with no music to go to, because that was the nice thing. You can have a punchline, you can have a discussion, you can have a punchline, and then you go to the song.
I always just think about, you know, how popular you guys were, and I had this conversation with a couple of different radio managers over the years, and I would say, well, what about Roger, Rick, and Marilyn? Certainly, they have an audience that would rather hear about Roger's weekend than another, who, you know, they don't need Lady Gaga again, but as you say, it was a music-driven product.
Speaking of punchlines, you guys had a writer on your show as well, right?
We did. We had Larry McGinnis. Larry's still in the business, but Larry was the creative director of Chum for decades, and he would be in on the morning show with us and provide material and topic ideas, yeah. And then our producer, Tom Jokic, who is still there with Marilyn and Jamar, he's a very good writer himself, very good with ideas, very creative. So we've always had that creative element in our show.
So when's the, I guess, even if you knew, you wouldn't say, when's the Marilyn announcement coming? Is she still planning on going for a few more years?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Yeah. She's younger. She's got more time left. Her television show is extremely successful.
Yeah, I'd say.
And the radio show's doing fine, so I think she'll be there for a while.
You know, a lot of, we talked about being bored in retirement, and we talked about, you know, having something to look forward to every day. So you don't, you're not a golfer, you're not a...
I do play golf. I don't play well, but I enjoy it.
Yeah, no one plays well. It's a ridiculous sport. And then Fred asked you, I think, during the break, like, you don't go away in the wintertime?
Well, I've never really had the opportunity to go away in the wintertime, and being newly retired, we don't have any plans for this winter, but, you know, maybe we will for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I got a nice home, I got a nice cottage. I don't need to go anywhere else.
No, that's fantastic. So what about, what are your thoughts generally now, the business, what it was and where it's going? Even talking about music radio, do you see a future for music on the radio? Or do you think eventually this medium is just going to be about the spoken word because we get our music on the devices?
I've always maintained there will be a need for local radio.
Mm-hmm.
you know, talking about things that are local. Things in Toronto, for example, politics or the TTC or whatever. I know the city of Toronto really well. I've made a point of getting to know the city well, and I always enjoy talking about things on the air that relate to the city of Toronto. And I think there will always be a need for local talk. In terms of the music, you're right. There are so many different ways to access music these days. Mm-hmm. Who knows what's going to happen? And when you say the word radio, are people going to be listening on a radio? A lot of people don't even have a radio anymore. They listen on their Sonos system.
Yeah,
or,
we just hey, Googled Phil's phone.
But they're smart. They're smart speakers, so to speak.
Yeah.
I mean, that in my house, that's what it is now. You just walk into a room and ask it to play a radio station, and if it's an AM signal with a lousy signal, it's crystal clear.
Yeah, it'll be audio. It'll be audio, but it may not be radio.
Exactly.
Well,
the piece of the pie gets a little bit smaller. Remember, mm-hmm. television was supposed to kill radio, and then video and MTV was supposed to kill radio. Well, we've survived all that, and I think we'll survive whatever comes along. The piece of the pie will get smaller and more challenging.
I agree with you, and I think there's always going to be a place for curated content, local content, and some form of radio will exist. And we really, in the last second here, just want to thank you for coming in.
Absolutely, and you know Toronto so well and have a passion for it. Maybe after John Torrey. Mayor. Mayor Roger.
Why would anybody want to get into politics?
Exactly. You know?
Really?
Radio guys are too lazy.
The abuse you take?
Radio guys, wait a second. We have to do something all day? No, thank you. Roger Ashby, good luck and all the best. Thank you.
Thanks.
Sincerely, we really appreciate you taking time. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, they're not like, they don't want to be part of this because it's like, what will happen? Hope they're not mean. But, and all the best to you in the years to come.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I've known you guys for years. I don't see you very often, and I've never been on your show before, and it was a pleasure. And I'd be happy to come back sometime.
We would love you to come back.
If you're stuck for a topic, I'll come back.
No, we'd love that.
We'd have the Roger spot. And Roger's like, no, not that much.
And maybe I'll see you up in Bob Cajun this summer.
Yeah, you and I ran into each other in Bob Cajun.
Well, yes, we do. Yeah.
With your selfies. Okay, I don't think we're going to do a podcast extra. We got stuff to do today. Sorry, Sean. We're back live on Monday. Fizz hosts the Best of Humble and Fred Friday and Saturday on Funny 820.
This episode of Humble and Fred Radio is brought to you by FYI Music News, the Retirement Sherpa, Dick's Guy, the Chambers Plan, Strainprint, the official band of Humble and Fred, Play for the Cat, iTex, LFS Credit and Finance Solutions, Hill Street Beverage Company, and our newest sponsor, Green Genie SEO. We broadcast to the world from the Humble and Fred Queensway National Broadcast Center. More Humble and Fred tomorrow and online at humbleandfredradio.com. Most of all.